coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
There's a kit.
Oh, God, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is my co-host, producer.
I have returned from a journey to a terrible place.
We have been to the mountain, and the mountain's full of fire and people talking to their own penises. That's cool. You heard his voice.
If you want to know what that is, you don't want to know.
Yeah,
what
come
that
to AllCon. We'll tell you all
come
about
to 16, and we'll all be revealed.
Yeah. That's not a double. That's a single entendre.
We can't afford double entendre here.
But we digress. As if that wasn't controlling enough of your mind, if that didn't put you into a weird mind space, you have found Hey Kids Comics on the fourth issue of a story arc that we are referring to as what, Cole?
This is sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
And tonight we have Countermeasures.
So if you've listened to our show before, thank you. Also, you know that by the fourth issue of a story arc, we're done. We're fried.
Yeah.
It's like a...
As if you couldn't tell from the opening.
It's like a weird Hunter S. Thompson in the desert at this point, just driving down the road, discussing it being backcountry. And tonight is no different. Tonight we have a show called Countermeasures. Which, Cole, what is Countermeasures about?
This is about, before we get into like this, the impossibly powerful characters that will round out this particular story arc, I thought it would be interesting to take a closer look at how do you counter the power of the mind? That is seemingly, I mean, apart from a good conk on the head. You know, unless you got that creepy kid from Star Trek. Naughty grump, bonk, bonk on the head. God, I hate that kid. He haunts my dreams to this day.
I'm immediately going to diverge from the show and discuss my most horrifying. And I don't have I ever talked about my most horrifying Star Trek incident?
I don't know that we have.
So, I don't care. All right. It's been a long week. This is our show. I'm going to talk about
it. Well, Bill Shatner has taken over your mind.
He has, but not this wasn't a mind control. This wasn't a Clint Howard in a Kiss of the Spider-Woman high-necked dress.
Oh, wow.
Dress. This is,
I hope you will relish it as much as I.
You're a child, man. You are a horrifying. You're a 12-year-old that's completely bald. I don't know what's happening right now. I was like 8 years old when I walked into my parents' house after being gone all day. We went to a family member's house. We came back and they were unloading the car, and I walked in and turned on the TV, and the original series was on, and it was the Salt Vampire.
Oh, yeah.
And I turned it on. I was eight, and I turned it on just as she turned into the Salt Vampire. Nightmares for like 5 years. Could not. I still can't watch it. I still freak out whenever it's on. But I digress immediately.
That explains why you freaked out when I asked you to pass the salt.
Well, yeah, you keep asking me to go to Utah, and I'm like, fuck you. I'm not going out there. So what is countermeasures? You were saying the ways to deflect, the ways to protect yourself.
Basically, the giant vase of salt tablets against the oppressive heat of a colonized planet in the Salt Vampire episode.
The only thing that could have been worse if it was a clown salt vampire. That would have been worse. You know what? Wait a second. Wait, oh my God, Cole.
Venusian Juggalo.
Oh, Venusian that's the name of our next band. That's the name of Ultron Cafe's next album.
Venusian Juggalo. Venu-
I just made a connection.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Alright.
What else am I? Okay, so you know I'm scared of clowns.
Terrified.
What is, canonically, what is the other thing I'm horrified of?
Oh, I can see where this is going, because you, nothing frightens you more in pharmaceuticals than those little desiccating.
Yes! Oh my god! So, do you think that me being horrified of those little silica desiccating packs comes from the salt vampire?
I think that it very well could.
Breakthrough, ladies and gentlemen. Hey Kids Comics, breakthrough.
We can't help you with the clowns, but perhaps we can help you overcome the next time you open a great big bottle of aspirin.
That's amazing. Okay, good. Let's move on. Moving on. Okay. We've done our good work for tonight.
Like the desiccating tablet is to moisture. Countermeasures are those things that help deflect, absorb, redirect, or otherwise eliminate the threats of mental powers or destroy them outright. A good example of a countermeasure would be the, Xavier got all First Order-y or like Jedi Council, and he's sort of like sweeping up even the little kids.
Right.
Because it used to be you had to hit, you had to start growing some pubes before you got into
the God. Good Lord. There's grass on the field, you can play ball, Xavier. Gross.
And
so gross.
Yeah. And then Beast just couldn't wait. He had to have more hair.
No, I'm sorry. No,
it turns out he was a blue hair.
Oh, God, haven't had a blue hair like Hank McCoy since B. Arthur.
That's right. So essentially, it got to the point in X-Men where, like, even little kids, just shy of toddlers, were showing up with superpowers. And
right.
So amongst the youngins was I think he may have been a Morlock. Called Leech.
Leech. He wasn't initially a Morlock, but later, like, he was kind of retconned. I guess his first appearance was, and then he kind of worked himself out of Morlock.
Didn't he look like a Vlasic mascot or something? I'm not talking about a stork. I'm just talking about the kid who'd
Listen,
be like the sign flipper out front of a grocery store.
What happens between a Fluke Man X-Files reject and the insurance company he shills for, Geico, is true. That's between them. Let's not.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just not, because it's their love child.
That's right.
Turns out it was Fluke Woman.
It's a Fluke entity that divides mitochondrically.
Yeah. Oh, I see. And whatever, like, fell out between the cracks there became Leech.
That's right.
So, but yeah, for some reason it also got the point where, depending on your power, you also had to be hideous.
Yeah, well, I mean, you needed some Nosferatu to balance your Dracula-style vampires. You needed some Count Orlocks to be your Morlocks versus, your beautiful people, Hellfire Club, Dracula mutants.
Yeah, you either get to be in the naughty Hellfire Club or you live down in the sewer with the turtles.
Which is another logical leap. That's good, yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah, I think that was a combination of trying to capitalize on the success of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and also the success of the, I believe, Robert Asprin edited Wild Card series that was invoked at some point in this podcast, where you had the Aces and the Jokers, and, like, a good percentage of the population got superpowers, but sometimes they came at the price of looking like some sort of hideous freak.
Did Callisto always have tentacle arms? I think she did, right?
I didn't know she had tentacle arms.
Oh, she got some straight-up tentacle arms. Like, Adam and Eve-style tentacle arms.
Like Japanese cartoon porn?
Yes.
Okay. Well, no, I don't think she did. Back when she was trying to, like, abscond with Angel and hanging him up on a couple of big meat hooks and marry him, I don't think she had the tentacle arm thing going on.
Okay.
It was rather inexplicable precisely what her power was meant to be, other than
looking like Pat Benatar on a bad day.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, like a cycloptic Pat Benatar.
What were we talking? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Countermeasures, yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
So yes, yeah, you're...
Leech, the one who could kind of just, like, literally just drain your powers off of you. And there, good God, apparently she got the tentacle arms.
I told you. I warned you. She got them tentacle arms.
Like, I think we're talking about, like, Abraxas, the slave master from Marvel's War of the Worlds series. He just had, like, one tentacle per arm.
No, she went full
yeah,
on.
Yeah, good. Nice. She had, like, a whole octopus on each side.
That's free like egg roll with purchase.
For a Cthulhu transplant or something.
That is my favorite. Science has gone too far, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, indeed. Well, it is elective surgery.
It's just, insurance does not cover that.
No, does not. Unless you're Cthulhu. But, you know, the idea behind Leech was that you had a character who, whoever he was associated with, anytime the heavy hitters came a-calling, then, you know, he would just sort of stop them cold.
Right. He was
I'm the Jugger guy in a suit I can barely support under my own strength.
Well, and that's the cool... And the weird thing about Leech is, if you look into him, like, when it's like somebody with psychic powers, you just shut him down. Yeah. When it's somebody that can shoot fire, they just don't shoot fire. When it's
they
some...
shoot nothing.
They shoot they're nothing.
Like, and they're just, like, actively wasting a lot of energy shooting nothing.
But when you start
you
looking...
know, it turns Pyro's flamethrowers into regular flamethrowers, which... up to a point, Leech is helpful, but...
But not after that.
At that point, he's just like, I'll just burn down the mansion. How about that? Tally-ho!
Pip-pip and all that. But if he takes you Juggernaut, he makes him just skinny guy.
Yeah, he just... He basically is then stuck inside his suit, like that guy with the bear suit. The guy that, like, made the Iron Man armor to go fight bears with, or go...
Yes! Yes! I want to have that guy on the show. I want to talk to him.
Is he still alive? I thought he got mauled or something. Maybe he's somebody else.
He couldn't support the weight.
I'm thinking of like somebody who didn't have an Iron Man armor.
Just a guy that went to fight bears.
Yeah, I just thought he'd go hang out with bears because he thought he was Grizzly Adams or something.
I see. What I did as soon as I found out we were doing this show. I went to the mountain and spoke to the oracle that we always go to in times of trouble and dismay, Yahoo Answers. So I've got an answer for us about how one can at least detect mind control, if not deflect mind control. this answer comes from someone 10 years ago, still as true today as it was 10 years ago, by the name of I Hate Laundry, 2 upvotes, okay? I'm going to read it verbatim.
I think we owe I Need Laundry, or whoever the hell that was.
I Need Laundry.
We owe them an upvote.
Yeah, should we give them an upvote? Do I have to
we
be logged in to give
them
an upvote?
Go in and upvote them.
Okay. Oh, see, now I Hate Laundry. I have to log in to upvote. I will. Everybody, if you're listening, go find use Yahoo user I Hate Laundry and upvote the shit out of all
yeah,
of their
Yeah, everybody,
things.
At least go through with every – if you have, like, multiple logins like me – go nuts.
Okay. There are documented cases of what you're suffering from. You are being subjected to mind control in the form of beta rays being shot into your brain from outer space to make you think and do certain things. I'm reading this. To deflect those rays, I recommend the standard 3-layer tin deflectionary device, which conveniently you can make yourself. Go get your mom's Lazy Susan and get some Reynolds brand tinfoil. Tear off 3 sheets, all the same size, roughly 24 by 18. Doesn't say foot or inches. I'm gonna go inches. Using black permanent marker, trace a circular Tupperware container roughly 6 inches in diameter, close to the center of the tinfoil as possible. Line up the circle with the top of your head and place the sheets on top of your head. As centered as possible, work the foil around your head or hairline as close as possible. Find yourself an athletic band to hold and secure the helmet. Rubber bands work equally well. Make sure your ear holes are covered too, because the most effective way of shooting mind control rays into your head is through that hole. I beg to differ. If you are familiar with rec specs, get you a pair of those too, tinted. Thank you, I Hate Laundry, but But how do we do this in comic books if you don't have the ability to negate someone's powers, Cole?
Yeah, and especially if it's not just these rays coming from space to tell you to do things.
Beta
like,
rays.
You know,
beta
waste
rays.
Mom's good tinfoil.
Right. That's. I mean, and
I think that's the problem there is that the rays are telling him to waste tinfoil. So it's really it's a Reynolds inside job.
It's that's right. It's a secret secret HARP program out in Nevada that Reynolds is paying for. Nice. Well done. Yeah.
I want to see how much and they actually made about an extra $10 million last year alone in foil hats.
Unfortunately, that's how much they had to pay the HARP program to keep their propaganda machine running. The Reynolds and
yeah,
Reynolds propaganda.
Eventually,
machine.
It does pay off.
Right.
At least that's what the beta rays have said.
So let's say you're a normie like you or I.
Yeah.
How do we stop from Professor X getting into our brain or the Purple Man or something like that? How are we going to stop that from happening? What's our countermeasure, Cole?
The problem is for your average rank and file human being, there's not, I hate to break it to you, there's no hope. There's precious, our precious little. Apart from, apparently, in their infinite wisdom, our own government has a wide array of hats, helmets, gauntlets, like weird Hannibal Lecter two-wheeler cart sarcophagi, or other devices that all conveniently, by whatever means they do what they do, and prevent these psionic and psychic powers from actually operating. The real secret is layer after layer after layer of precisely applied tinfoil.
I hate laundry was right. Maybe
yeah,
he wasn't using enough.
It's tinfoil. That's the secret. Tin fell out of vogue with
Tinfoil. Foil.
Yes.
Okay.
99 times out of 100, you go looking for foils on your aisle with your various wax papers and Ziploc bags. You're going to find aluminum, or as we say on the other side of the pond, aluminium foil. But finding the old original tinfoil is a secret, and that's wherein lays the rub. The government has taken over all the tinfoil production.
That's true. The other thing you can do is let's say, as evidenced by the Punisher. Punisher's a normal guy, right? Well, normal enough. He's batshit crazy, but he's normal enough. The Punisher cannot be mind controlled through normal means. I imagine if Eros gets the hand on him and tells him to suck on his toes, he's going to do it. But through your normal Purple Manish means, you can't get a hold of Punisher, because apparently Punisher, and this is why I love comic books. And this is one of the reasons I absolutely love comic books. I've been working on, we're doing a show in the near future called That Moment When, and I've been going through a lot of my That Moment Wins, different variations on That Moment Wins, and there's so many of them where I'm like, That Moment When, I just ask myself, what the hell is going on? And this is like one of those moments where the Punisher, because he uses, quote-unquote, more of his reptilian brain than most other people do, can deflect this. So if you're tapped
also,
into that,
maybe John Rambo would be immune.
Right. If your flight or fight mechanism is solely fight, maybe you can be immune. That's one way, apparently. Are there any other ways that you can think of that if you are a normal guy, you can just get immunity from some of this stuff?
A good way is don't get involved in superheroics.
I mean,
I am
that's
large,
true.
Yeah, you know, but even then, sometimes superheroes get involved with you.
Mm-hmm.
If the Netflix series Jessica Jones is any indication, or Alias upon which it was based, where people are just, you know, hanging out, doing what they do, going to work, getting a drink, just have to be on the street, and Purple Man comes along and mind farts them, and then that's it. Unfortunately, there really isn't a lot you can do. You're just along for the ride.
Well,
but
yeah,
you can curry the favor. It's important to be a Rick Jones or whenever possible, a Sapphire. If you can get in good with the superheroes, chances are, be sure and let your employer know. It's a bit like being a reservist, because at any moment you're probably going to get kidnapped.
Sure.
So you want to make sure that your work is cool with the fact that some days you just aren't going to show up. And when you do come back, you probably have ligature marks on your ankles and wrists from chains or other restraints. But, you know, eventually your super-powered friends will come to your rescue. But it's also helpful if you just happen to see, like, I don't know, electro-blasting people across the street. You want to phone it in to have a direct line for help.
Sure. And also, you know, if you work in the Avengers Mansion or at the jail, if you're a Snapper Carr, if you're a Rick Jones, if you're a Jarvis, if you're an Alfred, the attendance policy is very, very lax. Because there's some expected tardiness or absenteeism, like you were saying, when you're in those situations, because you never know when you're going to turn into a giant, you know, rampaging blue monster or a giant Jimmy Olsen turtle man, you know.
Absolutely. And it happens at an alarming rate.
It really does. It's to the point where it's in your insurance policy. It's right there. It's part of your retirement. It's almost like FMLA at that point. But the other way, if you don't have superpowers and you want to make sure that you're immune from, you know, Martian Manhunter getting inside your brain or anything of that nature, just go straight batshit crazy. Go straight for it. There was an instance in one of the, I believe it was the Grant Morrison, I promise I didn't do this on purpose, one of the Grant Morrison JLA runs where they wanted to get, and I believe it was Rock of Ages, where they wanted to get a secret out of the Joker's mind. And so the only way that they could do it was Martian Manhunter had to go into his mind and try to get the information. And it took, like they did it eventually, but the only way that they did it was Martian Manhunter had to go into his mind and take his insanity away. So they made him a normal person. Martian Manhunter made him a normal person for like three pages of a comic book to get some information. And then he snapped right back. Like he had to hold it, like, you know, like Atlas holding the world above his shoulders.
Yeah, push it back like a temporary damming or something.
That's right. But yeah, you can be literally crazy and stop mind control from working. Ambush Bug does it. Howard the Duck does
true.
It. Yeah. So if you're crazy, you can stop mind control from happening.
Well, another good way to do that is to be very well trained.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually, in a way, kind of helps support the notion or the concept posited on this very arc that all these powers are intrinsically psionic.
Right.
And as such, within each of these minds, not only is there the power, say, to heal and smell or see or taste things at a distance and survive having all of your bones completely dipped in metal and put back inside.
Sure, sure.
Along with either a coating over your shutter, bone claws, or some bionic claw mechanisms replacing your radius and ulna. Deep within that is the same core psionic ability that allows Professor X to tickle your mind. And I think Professor X recognizes that because there's precedent within X-Men of him training his students to at least be, if not immune to psionic attack, at least psionic resistant.
My favorite instance of what you're talking about is later in the X-Men series, Cyclops has what is referred to as a magic box inside his head containing all the secrets of the X-Men that can't be opened or moved by psychic powers. Magic box. Got that magic box
magic
in there.
Box.
Got that magic box. What? Couldn't come up with anything more creative than I guess we are talking about Cyclops. Couldn't come up with
he's not exactly, you know, Mr. Ad-Lib.
He isn't an improv. He's the Del Close of the X-Men.
He's the one who goes to the improv, you know, like improv night or ad-lib night. It has a script. It's like, no, that's not how that works.
It's like, yes and, Cyclops. Yes and.
Yes, right. So magic box. He knew that things that were impossible were known as magic. Most strikingly, of course, the magic bullet. So, you know, that seems to be like the only thing he could think of.
Right. And I guess it was a shard of the void in his brain. A shard of the void is what it was. Okay.
Well, apparently, you know, he was thinking about it's sort of, you know, he thought he was being clever. It's sort of like a play on thinking outside of the box. Inside his thinking.
Damn it.
Damn blown it. Mind.
Blow boom. Head cannon. Box outside his thinking, man.
A great head cannon was Karma from the New Mutants. Who was a, I think she was a charter member of the New Mutants when apparently Scott was asked to name the next group of X-Men on Xavier's behalf. That's the only place this moment I can think of that a name like the New Mutants came about.
It's like, shit, they're new.
Xavier is powerless to, like, borrow. Like, you know, Jean Grey could borrow the skills of surgeons, but she can't give a stinking shard of imagination to her boyfriend.
Right, she can't reach into Mel Brooks's brain just for a second.
She can't, like, visit her mind upon Imagination Land from South Park and just break a piece off or something.
The way this plays out in my brain is Professor X wheels over to Scott and says, Scott, we've got this team. We need a name. X-Men, it's catchy. You know, it was great. It served us well, but we got this new team, and we don't want to confuse it. So I need you to come up with a name.
Totally different.
He walks in the library and slams the giant oak doors, and he's in there for days. And Beast is outside. He's like, where's Scott? He's sequestered in the library trying to come up. And he comes out and he's like, I've got it. And they're like, oh, do tell. You've been in there for 4 days. You haven't eaten or slept. And he's like, the New Mutants. And they're like, for shit's sake, Scott.
Go get a sandwich.
Damn it.
Because, I mean, the short list was the New Mutants or West Coast X-Men. Because he'd heard that somewhere.
Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Mutants didn't fly.
Now, there were so many, actually. The things they found in the waste paper basket.
Well, you know, he was just flipping through Professor
Monty
X's...
Monty Python's Flying Mutants.
Yeah, flipping through the record collection for the vinyl collection Professor X has in the library, just like the Mamas and the Mutants. No. Yeah.
Cloudy with a Chance of Mutants. What does that even mean?
Lemony Snit... No.
Well, of course, that does bring to mind the wonderful children's book series with Wolverine, Schnickety Schnicket.
Damn it! I don't like you very much right now. You've upset me. You have upset me.
You don't like Schnickety Schnicket?
This is upsetting. This show has become upsetting to me.
One of the members of the awkwardly named New Mutants. God bless them, the Hellfire Club had the Helions. At least they got a cool-ass name. Because apparently, Sebastian Shaw, or whatever the hell his name is, and company have an imagination as well as, you know, some... Very Austin Powers taste in clothing.
That's right. As well as a bus and truck company's version of Jane Eyre that they found all the costuming for in the back of their warehouse.
They absconded with the future wardrobe, or basically they sold off their old wardrobe to Hamilton.
How to succeed in mutants without no.
crumple. So one of the charter members was the Vietnamese girl Karma, who had the power to basically take over your mind.
Right.
Which is a great power to have, especially if you're, you know, a young kid trying to head up a group of mutants, some of whose powers are inexplicably overtly limited or don't really make much sense, like Sunspot, who was, like, ultra-powerful and super strong but not invulnerable. A nice conceit until he chucks a tree at someone and they chuck it back at him and he smashes it with his non-invulnerable but incredibly powerful fist, which would have been shattered.
Yeah, it's like they forgot is what happened.
A bit worse off than Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable after that.
Oh, sidebar, did you see that Shyamalan's next movie he's talking about doing is a sequel to Unbreakable?
Finally!
I know, right?
He's taking longer than frickin' Star Wars.
Thank God for that. All right, continue. Yes, but karma.
Apparently, among the things Professor X did poorly with his new charges, beyond just saddling them with the worst superhero name possible, other than Ultra Force, was to not, give them a, a yearbook or anything, how to identify other members of the team who aren't in residence and haven't been for years. So Wolverine comes hoving into to Gray Malkin Lane and thinking he's going to go and maybe take a nap in his old room or something. I forget why he was there. And all of a sudden, all hell's breaking loose because this young gung-ho group of piss and vinegar teenagers have decided they're going to go after this creep that may or may not be the Juggernaut or Magneto or...
Whatever, you're right.
Could be Spanisher for all we know. But we're going to get him. Wolverine can't get a word in edgewise to mention I'm a member of the team that has a name, the X-Men. But at one point, Karma does her blast into his brain, and he's like, there's a visual, effect for that, this sort of purple nimbus that she gets, and I think her quarry gets as well. And he's like, lady, get out of my head.
Yeah.
And she freaks out because he has dismissed her.
Well, okay, so in my research, I came across mutant healing factor as a way to stop.
So there somebody's couching it
yep.
as the mutant healing factor because if I'm not mistaken, it was specifically cited that it was a result of Professor X training his X-Men to deflect.
Well, that might be true for Wolverine, but like for instance, of course, because Deadpool, they've taken Deadpool down every possible road. It's like it's like a damn F-150 commercial when you're dealing with Deadpool.
He just want what's his name from
Sam Elliott.
Yeah, you want Sam Elliott there just narrating.
Sam Elliott. Like, I can't even do a Sam Elliott impression, but regardless. Because when you're talking... Yeah, so his might be, but Deadpool's is because he has, full body cancer, and his body is constantly healing itself, that his brain cells are constantly dying and being repaired so frequently that nothing can take a hold of his brain to control it.
Oh, yeah, so by the time the brain that you've... Yeah. I don't know, in a way it kind of makes a little bit of sense because the brain you've latched onto just died simultaneous to your latching onto it. So you would have to be constantly bombarding
right.
and having your psychic attacks sloughed off.
That's like the ending of Clue that I didn't like. Let's go back.
So it was like Emma Frost in the conservatory with the
I'm thinking of the movie where they had five different endings.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I was like, let's back that up and go for another one because that one doesn't work for me.
That's a Vulcan in her eyelid, really.
Yeah, but I know there are plenty of instances cited that when you have a character that you don't want to have mind controlled, all you have to do is say that he was trained not to be mind controlled.
Yeah.
Shield agents, Hydra agents, X-Men, Avengers, whoever you need to be trained. Oh yeah, no, they were trained not to be mind controlled. It was fine. It's really a Marvel thing more than anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, mind control is a popular thing at Marvel anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Winter Soldier. But one of the things you have to look for, I'm curious though, is there a precedent of someone pretending to be mind controlled? I seem to think I've read something where that was the case, but I cannot place it.
I know that there are precedents for people that were like, I'm not, I'm pretending to be brainwashed. I'm trying to think of a few that I know of. There were some in the Fantastic Four, where especially in, there was one with Reed Richards pretending to be mind controlled. That's right. He was pretending to be mind controlled during the new Fantastic Four. So the Wolverine, Ghost Rider, Thor.
Same as the old Fantastic Four?
You remember my favorite new Fantastic Four.
Oh yes, the Ghost Rider.
Yes.
Or Mr. Fix-It, yes.
Yeah, these are our four most popular characters. Let's put them all in the Fantastic Four and see if we can breathe some life into this book for the next three issues. Oh, it didn't work? All right. That one. That's the only one I can really think of off the top of my head that I know that there are more. I know that there are more.
There have to be.
Batman's done it a million times, you know.
I think taking a little, you know, off the earth a bit, but it seems like ultimately the mind control plant that Mogul used on Superman, he ultimately got better and then pretended like he wasn't.
Right. Do you mean what was the name of that?
The greatest Superman story ever. No.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. What do you get a Superman who already has a comb?
It was the gift of the Super Magi.
Yes! We're just going to go with that. I don't even care at this point. Just go with it.
That's the name of my next album.
It should be the name of your memoirs.
It's a spoken word album.
That's right. You know, if you're a normal guy, normal gal, and there are ways. A lot of it involves going batshit crazy or living under the thumb of a megalomaniacal quadriplegic with brain powers. But you can do it.
I think he's paraplegic.
What did I say?
Quadra.
Oh, he can use his arms. He can use his arms. He's paraplegic. All right, fair enough. That was my bad.
Or, you know, or maybe he has a little attached baby, and he's quadriplegic.
Is he quadriplegic?
Quadriplegic.
I don't want to think about that, though. You're really trying to give me nightmares at this point.
It's really bad when you got somebody who looks like a cross between the baby and It's Alive and one of those angry baby over the head masks that you get at Spencer's.
For the Man Who Has Everything, by the way, is the name of the Superman book. Also, I want to stop thinking about I want to stop thinking about Professor X opening his shirt and exposing a chud.
Chud. Or a boglin.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh. I used to have a boglin.
I am a puppet.
Where did the boglins go? Where have all the cowboys gone? I want a boglin again.
I'm afraid most of them probably rotted away in the way that grade of rubber does. But,
so what about like technological
have my boglin revulcanized?
Or what about a radial boglin? What about like tech or equipment based blockage?
Yeah, that's really what I was getting at. It's funny how anytime, like, say, the Avengers round up a bunch of, like, escape supervillains, any of them that have built-in, you know, onboard heads-up power, at the end of the issue, there's, like, some sort of, you know, super meat wagon that's come around to collect them all up.
Yeah.
And inevitably, there's, like, these weird handcuffs that cover your entire wrist, elbow, and shoulder.
Yes, yes, there are.
And, or there's, like, a... There's like a helmet that looks like it's out of the trunk of the Imperial Troop Transport from vintage Star Wars. Just something to slide over your head to keep you from work. But, you know, you've got, speaking of cornering the market on tinfoil, Magneto or Juggernaut have helmets.
Yeah.
That, for reasons. That are like the, you know, the Michael Okuda answer to how the Heisenberg compensator works very well, thank you. Work on exactly that same sort of, I don't really want to be bothered with giving you a solid answer principle.
Right, of course.
And so, you know, you have those sorts of abilities, and I've just been sent a picture of a boglin.
I'm just repeatedly sending you pictures of boglins at this point.
I'd forgotten that the box looked like they, you know, rended the bars of their cage open to escape into the world and wreak havoc. As long as they have a hand at their ass.
I love the fact that you're sitting there giving this fairly eloquent, like, this is what it looks like when the guardsmen come to take someone to the raft if you're in the frame. And I'm just over here laughing maniacally and just control-V-ing boglins into your face.
That's mind control for you.
That's right. There. I'm just going to inundate your synapses till you get, you've lost control of yourself.
That's right. Well, I've definitely lost control of my bowels. It's boggling. Another good countermeasure, however, is to use the giant approach.
Sure.
Where you gather a bunch of stones, you get some master sponge maker to make you some really authentic stone-looking sponges, amongst other mental tricks where you challenge the giant to squeeze water out of stones, and you show him how you can just rend about a good 4 quarts out yourself. I forget. It's like the Jack the Giant Annoyer. There's like an old tale I remember, and there were like several little things like hurling a stone. He basically had this bird that wrapped in a stone wrapping, that, so it looked like, you know, he'd thrown his thing for as far away as that bird could fly.
Right.
And then, you know, the giant goes off dejected, thinking that I'm just a poor, impotent, useless giant. He wasn't actually there to kill or eat anybody. He just wanted to, you know, hang out. And they had to come out and just completely, emasculate him in front of God and everybody.
He wasn't a bad giant.
Yeah. So apparently, in the same way I just channeled that from my youth, Reed Richards channeled from his childhood the same story when the Guardian came a-calling from the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar.
Really?
Convinced as he was in a typically John Byrne chestnuts a-roasting kind of story that the FF were Skrulls or some such.
Oh, of course.
And amongst other things, he was doing, it was Byrne doing practice for Superman in a lot of ways, because, you know, he was utilizing Marvel's Superman tribute. I'm sorry, not Riff.
Whoa.
Nobody's saying anything. They, you know, just anyone could make that mistake. Whew. But at one point, he's picking up the entire Baxter Building by one corner. And Byrne loves to spout pseudophysics.
Well, sure, yeah. Technical jargon out, that makes no sense, of course.
Yeah, and point out that, you know, you cannot pick up an entire structure like that by one corner like it's, you know, just a cardboard box or something. It would start to collapse under its own weight because it's not designed to load bear at angles.
Right.
Especially at awkward angles off the corners. And so he surmises quite accurately that the Guardian is essentially a psionic that allows him to do feats of daring do and massive strength that defy the physical laws while also being super strong acting.
Okay. Yeah. So the tectile telekinesis psionic, you know, hold it all together while you're doing the one, you know, I like, yeah, without, yeah, absolutely.
Without even realizing that's what you're doing. It just, the world, the universe bends to your will, to what you perceive. He's not, obviously not educated enough to realize it's impossible, so you don't get that sort of Gilligan, you can't fly sort of being told you can't do something causes you to fall. So basically he has Sue go up and you know, throw down the gauntlet, and of course, you know, laughably, this little waifish chick has no business threatening the mighty Guardian, so he begins to try to pummel her to no avail. Or no, I mean, I think it was he was pummeling Mr. Fantastic to no avail, so much so that he finally has this mental breakdown without having benefit of realizing that Sue is right there, all invisible, projecting a force field
over
her husband to make him invulnerable. And then I think that, you know, Reed takes it a step further with laughter and calling him impotent. I think even urinates on him at one point.
Tells him to make him a sandwich, smacks him in the face. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that was his wife. Sorry.
That was his wife. Like, yeah, thanks for protecting me, honey. You know, Reedy's getting a little hungry.
Little Reedy's getting hungry.
Reedy's getting a little hungry, you know. Yeah, using my old brain power there makes for a powerful appetite. Here, some meatloaf. You know, the boys will be home soon in the Fantastic Car. You're going to be like that little curly-haired guy with the mustache in Emergency. So you better have something on the...
Wow.
Did I just make it even worse?
You did.
How absolute worst husband ever gets even worse by equating his wife to the cookie on Emergency.
Now, of course, you know, the best way to be immune to a psionic ability is to just have them yourself. Because
that is a tremendous plus.
Because that way you can apparently just, which always cracks me up, the side effect of having a psionic ability is that you then can stop other people's psionic abilities from working on you, which I don't know how that's an intrinsic value of just having a psionic ability, but all right, I guess if you say so.
It's a bit of fighting fire with fire, which is one of the biggest, most effective ways to counteract psionics. And like you say, you either have them or you have a psionic ability that allows you to deflect or destroy or otherwise undermine the psionics of others. And I think a great way to counteract the psionic ability of those who psionics manifest themselves in physical telekinetic ways is to just sort of convince their brain that they have no power, which is kind of what Reed was doing without the benefit of getting into his head with his own head. He got into his head by just sort of, you know, dirty pool.
So I've got a question for you. Without any research, I want to know your speculations into this. Why is Plastic Man unable to be mind controlled?
I think Plastic Man is unable to be mind controlled because he has that uncanny ability that the Joker had on a much grander scale. It's been well established that there are levels of crazy,
right,
that make even batshit go, damn. And
yeah.
That's exactly where you find Plastic Man. Somewhere along the line, after he turned his back on being a criminal thug, Eel O'Brien just went, damn!
Just lost Crazy. It, just snapped.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's the opposite of Batman or Judge Dredd, right? Because both of those have been able to stop mind control, with the exception, the one notable exception of Space Octopus Karate. Because he did fall for that. But I guess, you know, when you're mind controlling yourself from the future and the past, it's a whole different thing. But
yeah, there you get into some weird paradox stuff. That'll be a whole other story arc.
But the idea is that your mind is so rigid, so locked in, that you cannot be dissuaded. It's not even that reptilian fight or flight mechanism. It's that you're so in control. It's the opposite of that kind of, like, Joker, Eel O'Brien crazy, right?
I mean, one can no more control Batman's mind than one can control the night.
Oh, my God. Or just...
Yes, he is the night.
Just like Judge Dredd, you can't control his mind because his mind is the law. Like, it's...
Yes, he is the law. That's and it includes his mind. And his mind is the law. And the law is his mind.
Everything I see is the law. This ham sandwich is the law.
That's right. It's like old Tootsie Roll commercials. Everything I think I see becomes the law.
Can you get me a Fanta? Oh, no, it's the law. Fanta. The fuck?
It just becomes everything. It becomes like Smurfville. It's like, I'm going to law over here to the law and see if the law is it law so I can law.
Just like Batman in the night.
Night, a law.
Can you bring the night around? I need a night out for a night. Oh, my God.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean, sir.
Yes, you do. Why is the knight talking to me right now? I need fourth meal.
Don't knight back to me, Alfred. I said Alfred instead of knight.
See what I did there? Yeah,
that's what happened.
I did that for you. I did that to make you feel better.
You driven me that close to damn.
It's a small step. It really is a fine line.
He is just walking the edge of damn.
Can you think of any really? We're heading down the wrap it up train right now. We're pulling into the station of damn. But
it's like that part of the roller coaster where you've just been jostled around. All of a sudden, you can feel it, and you see the crowds queuing up for the next ride.
That's right. You're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, it's like.
Can you think of any instances where mind-powered superheroes have fought each other?
Wow. Yeah, there are several, I'm sure. I'm trying to conjure up ones that I've seen where they're just sort of like locked into this. What about Professor X and Morocco Mole there? What was that guy's name?
Morocco Mole.
Shadow King.
Yeah, that happened a lot.
They both had those you know, they were both big fans of Doctor Who. Or Doctor Who was a big fan of, who could say, he's a Time Lord. He probably influenced Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, because anytime you get one of those psychic fights, it's like you're in Ricardo Montalban's bedroom or a P. Diddy party. It's all white. It's just a square room, and you're in there, and you got to fight. Like if Cole and I were to fight,
the most boring Pokemon arena ever.
Right.
Where they fight. I figured out where they fight.
Okay.
Scott Summers' brain.
Oh, my God. Yes. I think I went Subway for lunch.
We have gone full circle now.
Like Shadow King and Professor X are just good. Like, Shadow King's a dragon and Professor X is a knight, and they're fighting, you know. He becomes a Pegasus and Shadow King becomes a tank. And you flash out to Scott Summers sitting there like, I think I want Subway for lunch today, but I don't want the steak. Maybe I'll get one of those turkey with avocado. And then flash back in, and he's like a giant boa constrictor, and Professor X is a giant ape.
Exactly. He's like King Kong ripping the Tyrannosaurus' jaw apart.
That's right.
And then you flash back to Scott.
And he's just holding up two polos in a mirror, like, maybe, you know, I'm going to go red? I'm going to go red this time?
I'm going to go purple or mauve. For the love of God!
To the arena!
Krakatoa is exploding on the horizon, and, you know, Fat Man and Little Boy have just simultaneously imploded. And
God,
you're back, Scott. New pants.
I want that comic book, but I want the Scott Summers stuff like illuminated in the margins.
Get Sergio Aragonés to draw in the march.
Like, just this epic white room battle between, you know, the White Queen or Sebastian Shaw and Jean Grey just like going at it, like full on 300 style, and then in the margins, it's like, we're out of mayonnaise. Yeah, I can't believe we're out of mayonnaise.
Scott Summers is, I think I'll watch The Matrix.
Should I watch the second Matrix or the third Matrix? The second Matrix had those really cool twins in them, but the third Matrix.
Oh, dear Lord, that is a thing of beauty. We need to.
What episode was the Seinfeld?
If anyone at Marvel is listening, or anyone who has their ear. Tell them we need to see.
Please.
The inside of Scott Summers' mind and the outside as well.
And it's just this one little box in the corner that nobody can get into.
They keep tripping on it.
That's right. Damn it, who put this here? Flash out. Where did I leave that box?
Box, magic box.
Do you have any final thoughts on Countermeasure Skull?
I think what's fascinating about countermeasures of any kind against the superhuman is I love the fact they range from the sensible, the logical, the extrapolating on something that's already there, like Wolverine's, you know, get out of my head, lady, or, you know, somebody thinking something through to a level that, you know, they can defeat
right
a psionic attack or... you know, or it can be the lockpick of a magic box. And they run the gamut from that down to the most tired and inexplicable chestnut of because we said so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It exists because we needed it.
Right, we were painted into a corner and we needed the ultimate nullifier.
Exactly, that's exactly where I was headed. We could sure go for an ultimate nullifier right now. But we don't want to embarrass ourselves by having an ultimate nullifier, so we just draw it in.
Right, right. Somebody call Professor X to use his brain powers to take over the world and convince everybody. You know, it's the psychic equivalent of Superman flying around the world backwards to turn back time.
You know what stops Dr. Psycho's power?
What's that?
Torso cuffs. I don't know, is it distracting, or does it actually sap his power in some way?
God damn it, can somebody bring the mind-nullifying stroller over here?
That's right. Let's put baby in a corner.
Sorry, Mad Hatter was here last week. It's still in the shop.
That's right. Get the torso cuffs.
All right. We're gonna wrap this one up. I think that we've taught everybody a lesson here in Mind Foo about how, in case, you know, Purple Man shows up on your block, or, you know, a white Martian shows up at work, you now have the ability to prepare yourself and defend yourself from mind control attacks.
That's right. This is like K-Kids Comics has now become the Rex Kwando.
Damn, I was thinking about that earlier today.
I got in your mind and I stole that.
You did, damn it. I tripped over that box.
That's how I get you. It's like one of those little banks with a hand that comes out and grabs the coin. That's how I mentally shake you down as you trip over the magic box. And I steal your thoughts.
I thought it was more like one of those donkeys where you lifted its tail and a cigarette comes out of its ass, but...
Actually, it's more like a boglin.
Ah, damn it. Damn it.
It's like a Stardust boglin that coughs up, like, little desiccator pouches.
You put your guns in me and I cough up dick desiccator pouches. Put on this toga and come to level 7, Phaeton.
So, naturally,
I've lost my mind.
All of this and more is coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, home of the Coffin Boglins.
Coffin Boglins? That's the name of my punk band.
Now, everybody wants Boglins.
That's right.
And
bringing them back.
You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Send us pictures of your boglins.
Don't say that. God only knows what we're going to get from Eddie alone.
I should have checked Urban Dictionary to find out if there's an unknown definition. Look for the tweets at the Jedi Cole U. And just be sure and check us out on the Jedi Cole Universe, on Podbean, wherever you're finding us. On Cinelinks, I'm starting to little by little get the Cinelinks posts caught up. I'm about four episodes behind now. Working on that. You may have seen a week or so back, a couple weeks back, that the Rancor Pit is back. As you're listening to this today, be sure on Sunday, the 5th of February, noon to 1 p.m. watchonairlive.com. Eddie Medina and I will be bringing you the Rancor Pit live, and in honor of the announcement of episode 8's title, we are going to be bringing you an episode all about the Jedi Order called At Last Jedi.
Oh, I thought it was The Last Boglin.
Oh, that's that was the story of a dejected young Andrew Farmer arriving at a Toys R Us, and there being like this crushed box, half the rubber torn up, dejected.
The rubber had desiccated, and one of those awful doll cow eyes had fallen out.
And it looked like, somebody ran over it with a pallet jack, boggling.
That's right.
That's just sad. I've made me weep.
Pallet Jack Boglin. He should be a character. He should be our version of the Morlocks in the Muggerville.
Oh, the Muggerville Pallet Jack Boglins.
That's right.
That live in an old empty septic tank.
And just for some reason, all that brings to mind is an image of a half Jack Palance with little desiccated arms crawling at you. You want to see me do some push-ups? Jack Palance.
You are my number one.
You are my number one.
I am Hey Kids Comics sign off.
Oh, my God. All right. So, with all that being said, from our boglins to yours.
From the bottom of our boglins.
Buy, collect, and enjoy comic books as well as original tinfoil. None of that aluminum shit.
Yeah. Watch when you go to the store. Look around. You have to kind of dig, but find the tinfoil. Also remember that the backside of a boglin looks like some sort of hideous reverse octopus tentacle.
Thank you, Robert Frost. Somebody needs to put that as a Facebook quote or a yearbook quote this year in their yearbooks, their graduating yearbooks for their senior year. All right, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, and make sure that you stay well aware and defended against all instances of mind control. Say goodnight, Cole, and Boglins, especially Boglins. Good night, everybody. From our Boglins to your Boglins, check your toilets before you sit down. That's right, because you never know what's in there. And if you want to send us Boglins, self-addressed stamped envelope to Modesto, California, just send it straight there. We'll get it. All right, good night, everybody. Thank you.